The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Force Center podcast feed is the Clone Wars Report. The screams of the Alina? Is that the noise that we got this week?
It's representative of all kind of characters trying to be not insensitive to Alina or the petites, whatever they're called. Just a general, you know, back of the galaxy planet that we're visiting.
Yes, the sounds of small warriors who may or may not have been misled by a dictator. Yeah. Yes. There's a lot of small warriors.
Thank you.
And I'm so glad that you broke the seal and you were the first to try to say that species name, petite. Yeah. But because I don't know. I'm just trying not to accidentally say
yes.
A different pronunciation that one could easily say when there are lots of T's and I's.
Yes. We'll go. Yeah. Now.
Petite?
Petite. My petitite might be it. I'm settling on petitite patuna.
I feel like a petitite is like some part of the body that my grandfather told me was hurting at some point. Like, my petitite's acting up.
Star Wars. It's the best.
Anyway, we are here to talk about the Clone Wars. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and the person making the wonderful warrior noises is, of course, Ken Nabsok. We're very excited to get into this. We're into season 4. Of the Clone Wars, and we're into, I think, perhaps one of the most unique arcs of the Clone Wars series here. We're going to be talking about Season 4, Episode 5, Mercy Mission, written by Bonnie Mark and directed by Danny Keller. Season 5, Episode 5, Nomad Droids, written by Steve Mitchell and Craig Van Sickle and directed by Stuart Lee. Ken, before I get into the summary, I'm just curious. As we were approaching these episodes, did you remember they were coming or did you like hit play and go, oh yeah, the droid ones?
I did not remember. And the only reason I knew is for this chunk of Clone Wars on those behind the scenes featurettes that they're putting on, that they have on StarWars.com. As you had mentioned last time out, it's not Filoni talking about one episode. It's just general fan Q&A over a chunk of episodes. And so they talk about Orphine, the kind of frog like nymph kind of magic elf nymph that shows up. And I was like, oh no. Oh, what is, I kind of remember this, but don't. So I had a little bit a heads up going in, but no, other than that, it was press play and try to remember.
Yeah. I think that in my mind, when I had been speeding through all of these episodes, when I first watched the Clone Wars in 2014, this is the section that I was enjoying very much, but just speed watching to get to Maul. That I think these episodes initially blended a little bit with the infamous D-Squad that we'll be talking about later. But then I rewatched these relatively recently with my wife. So they were sticking out in my mind again. And I was so excited to get to them to go like, I remember events, but what's really going on? So I'm excited to dig in.
Yeah. Yeah.
So here is the summary then. Are you ready?
Oh, I am more ready for these summaries than any summary you've done.
Excellent. Here we go. A mission of mercy. Commander Wolf is diverted from the war effort to answer a call for help. Earthquakes have ravaged the planet of Alene. To assist with this mercy mission, Senator Padme Amidala sends her loyal droids, C-3PO, to translate, and R2-D2 to fix the damaged computer systems. Anxious to return to the front lines, Commander Wolf fails to understand the true situation, but 3PO and R2 discover what is truly going on under the surface. Literally. Directed by the Alina, the droid duo travels underground and discovers the sentient race of tree people known as the Kindaloo and the mysterious spiritual guide frog nymph Orphine. They reveal the subterranean beings and the Alina cannot breathe one another's air. A vital seal was broken, and in retaliation, the subterranean beings caused massive earthquakes. 3PO and R2 solve a riddle to get back to the surface and restore the seal, saving all the different people of Alene. Victory, kind of, because that's only the first episode. Then, On their way home aboard Jedi Master Adi Gallia's starship, the Republic is attacked by General Grievous. 3PO and R2 flee in a Y-Wing and crash land on a mysterious planet called Petite Petuna, where they meet a clan of petite people, small warriors with electrified weapons. These warriors are under the brutal rule of a corpulent dictator known as Big Hazu. 3PO accidentally assassinates him. The people are thrilled. After a good effort to establish democracy, R2 and 3PO fly away in their Y-Wing, only to crash on the planet Balnab. There they discover the Balnab people are also being ruled by a harsh dictator. This one, named Albi Diwa, turns out to be a hologram projected by pit droids from a crashed ship. R2 reveals the pit droid truth and the Balnab people revolt. Fleeing once again, R2 and 3PO run out of power. They are picked up by Wee Kwei pirates and forced to compete in a droid fighting ring. But wait, the pirate ship is fired on by General Grievous just for target practice. Exploding out of the ship, R2 and 3PO make it onto a separatist dreadnought, which is promptly boarded by Jedi Master Plo Koon and Commander Wolf. Finally reunited with the Republic, 3PO, a storyteller at heart, is eager to share their adventures. Plo Koon tells 3PO Commander Wolf would love to hear the stories. In truth, he would not. But 3PO begins anyway. This is the end for us, but not for Commander Wolf.
That's wonderful. I muted my mic at one point to sip some iced tea, and you didn't hear one of my bigger laughs. That's wonderful.
Yeah, a lot going on in these two episodes. So
yeah,
let's dig into it. What was your overall reaction? Did you love these episodes, like them, struggle with them? Where were you at?
I can't fully explain it. None of those choices apply. All of them apply. And I was looking at what was in the notes there. I'm sure you stumbled on it too, but this is considered one of the least watched episodes of Clone Wars by numbers. The first episode specifically, Mercy Mission. Whether that's downloads, I mean, streaming numbers are always a little weird. I don't know. I think it's like from 2019. So, you know, there's some realities in this episode. They're a little different, weird. But I got to tell you something. I love that these episodes exist. I look at the Clone Wars as a collective artist, you know, from Lucas Filoni, Henry Gilroy, on down to the actual people credited for writing and directing these episodes. I just love it when an artist just kind of goes off and does something really different. I always like celebrate that and consider it very confident. And it's like, you know, I don't know, Springsteen doing an album of just singing Denny menu items or something. So I might only listen to it once, but I'm just glad it's there. Because like I said, it's an artistic confidence. And I really think, you know, they were like, crap, Star Wars is also influenced by Gulliver's Travels and even Willow and even The Tempest. And let's just explore it.
Yeah, no, this is... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, and I just kind of like that. I might never watch these again unless Clone Wars Report Version 2 pops up for 4/7. But I like that they exist.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I really, really like them. They aren't necessarily going to be my go-to episodes, but in sort of digging a little bit deeper, I think I enjoyed them the most ever when I watched them this morning to get ready for our recording. There's so much to love about them, but I think. For me, I'm starting in a similar place for you of there's so much great energy across the Clone Wars, but I think really ticking up in season 3 of we can just make the show we want to make. Obviously, we know from behind the scenes that is often Lucas just going like, hey, Dave and team, here's a crazy thing I want to have happen. Make it happen. And I think questioning like, okay, well, why is this here when like the next arc we're going to talk about, you know, the horror, the terror of Pon Krell.
Yeah.
Dark, dark, dark. There's lots of dark stuff going on. And it feels like Lucas always has this instinct to say darkness is a part of this. The dark side is natural. But there's all these other ideas and we got to spend time with them. And in particular, this is just, these episodes are such a celebration of kind of what the droids represent, right? Like, in a way, it's like, hey, Lucas is like, we used to have that droids cartoon in the mid 80s.
Yeah.
Let's do a couple of those episodes in the middle of the Clone Wars, you know? And the way it slows down and kind of reminds viewers that there are other sides to Star Wars than war, lightsabers, blasters. Like, I don't think it's an accident that it's structured this way, that Commander Wolf is almost like the way I think some audience members might feel of like, yeah. I got to war to fight. Why am I dinking around with this silly, funny, you know, stuff? Yeah. And then the fact that even in the beginning of the second episode, like the big battle that we would normally focus on, General Grievous versus Adi Gallia, it's literally in the background. And I feel like it is speaking to fans, saying, you know, maybe the kind of fans who I was at one point, not anymore, were like, I wanted Star Wars to be action packed and gritty and moody. And this feels like a way of saying, like, it can be those things, but it is these other things too. It just ends up being fascinating because I think it's like, I was approaching these episodes from that perspective.
Yeah.
And then I realized these episodes in tone are cute and fun, but they're cute, fun episodes about deadly earthquakes with massive casualty counts, accidental murder, failed democracy, multiple forms of enslavement, dead pirates floating in space. Like, I'm like, what am I calling cute and fun? I need to look in the mirror.
An absolute toppling of empires. Like, it's it's big stuff. You're absolutely right. I think you're so right to phrase it. It's like, at one point in time, I would have engaged with Clone Wars and did engage in Clone Wars on that level. And when people would ask me in 2011, do you like Clone Wars? Yeah, it's got some great fighting. Like, it looks like Star Wars, feels like Star Wars, which is 100% accurate. And that's part of it. And I do like that they're slowing down and forcing you to look at all this and wild, weird, just imaginative ways. Like, just craziness goes on here. But you're right. It's the pirates hurtling through space to their death reminds you there's some stuff going on.
There's a little bit of stuff going on. Grievous just shooting for target practice like a ship. See if you can hit it.
Yeah.
It's so brutal. I think the other big picture thing for me is really slowing down and spending time with it. I think this might be some of the most successful 3PO humor for me. Like, I wrote down a ton of 3PO jokes. I think it's maybe because we're just slowing down and spending time with him and his perspective. So a lot of the comedy isn't like a quick drive-by. It's really coming from him as a character.
I couldn't agree more. As someone who's still critical at times with the Attack of the Clones humor, 3PO, the comedy character, you and I know that's a big thing with us, and we're big fans of that. And you're 100% right. The relationship between him and R2 is at its best in many points in these episodes. And it's got a sentimentality to it when they're both losing power that you just kind of feel sad about it. It's a buddy comedy drama at times too.
A cute, fun, violent buddy comedy. Perfect. Yeah. You mentioned the references, right? There are some extremely explicit references to Gulliver's Travels and Wizard of Oz and even Willow. Why do you think they are there? What do they accomplish for you? Because, like, it's easy to slip into that sort of, hey, here's my article about, you know, Easter eggs you missed, and here's what was referenced. Like, okay, cool, but why?
Right.
You know, for you, what was the why of those references, or what did they add?
Great question, because I did make myself kind of ruminate on that a little bit, because even watching the behind the scenes where Dave Filoni's like, yes, that was kind of a reference to the brownies from Willow. In fact, George said, try not to make them too much like them, but it was kind of hard not to. You know, I'm surprised Rick Overton and Kevin Pollak didn't voice some of the characters. The why of it for me is also just kind of analyzing all aspects of the hero's journey. That makes sense going back to where I might have been a fan at one point of, oh yeah, hero's journey, unknown warrior emerges to save the day. And there's a lot of different other aspects to it. And some of the cultural aspects, there's some stuff in here I thought that it was never uncomfortable for me or anything, but just like, hey, the clones and maybe the Republic want to involve everyone, but they're definitely overlooking these quote unquote third world kind of planets here and kind of diving into the power of cultures and culture clashes and what you can learn and come together. There's some bigger things like that at play for me, particularly in the second episode. But that's kind of where I went with it first to start on.
Yeah, no, I think that stuff's all great. I think for me, there's this spirit of Star Wars has always been Lucas and then all of the other creators involved over the years, pulling from the sort of collective collection of storytelling in our culture and in many other cultures, and then putting it kind of through this filter into Star Wars, and it becomes something different and unique. So I like that can apply to sort of like kaiju or samurai or Western, but also to these like very specific classic stories that are about the sort of the journey to understand the world, right?
Yeah.
And to not just understand the world the way you know it, but to go out and journey and discover beautiful things and discover harsh truths.
Yeah.
And pulling in these kind of classic tales of a journey and a discovery was really powerful to me.
Yeah, yeah. I 100% agree on that there too. Just the spirit of understanding was all through these episodes, and kind of using that kind of stuff to tell you. And it's also just kind of fun, I'm sure, for the creators to pull from all aspects of great storytelling. And it's funny, it's kind of in the news again with the success of Dune, the Villeneuve picture that's out there, where the amount of people are now discovering that, hey, there's some things similar to Star Wars. And it's like, well, yeah, George pulled from a lot of spots. That was the intention. So I love kind of seeing that at play in all levels of Star Wars.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So let's move on then to the morals of the episodes. The first moral is understanding is honoring the truth beneath the surface. The second moral is very familiar. It is who's the more foolish, the fool or the fool who follows him. So what did you think of having one of the morals just be straight up Obi-Wan talking to you?
I loved it. It's oddly enough, though, wasn't the moral I gravitated to at the end of viewing both episodes. But I you perked up like, oh, we're going big. We're going big.
Yeah. Yeah. I like them both and can absolutely talk about the first one, but it was fun to see the who's the more foolish, the fool or the fool who follows him, because it can just be a fun Star Wars quote. You know it from that context of it's a little bit more Obi-Wan challenging Han to have a better idea. Like, yeah. Well, if you think it's so foolish, why did you go along with it? But to see that played out as a story is a moral about multiple cultures who are allowing themselves to kind of believe the lie of a dictator that they actually do have the power to overthrow, but they are not doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a poor Han. I feel, you know, you love to bring in Han's brashness at any point. That actually works. And again, it's pretty powerful stuff. Toppling empires.
Yeah. A lot of empire toppling for a short, quick adventure. What are your thoughts on that first moral?
I just, you know, I went deep with it when we talk about what's at stake and what it connects. I just, there's something about, I loved about it, about this lesson of where true understanding comes both on maybe people around you and yourself and accepting yourself and finding your place in a lot of things. And that's pretty deep of just this honoring. Honoring is I don't know, it's, you're not just bowing before it and saying, yes, ma'am, yes, sir. It's just, it to me, it's you know, acknowledging the breadth of truth and the many directions it can go, the many directions where it can challenge you, it can change you, it can make you grow. So in the end of the day, maybe it's something that's been just in my life. But that's the power of these episodes. And you and I rewatching them at these points in our lives. Like, it's very weird. I keep telling you, like, there's some stuff with that Ahsoka stuff going on with the Trandoshans and the hunt and everything that hit me right where I needed it. And that's why I love coming back to Star Wars, and I constantly do it. And I've recently kind of said something. I said, you know, often, like, you and I, Joseph, might be referred to as others by as Star Wars experts. Great fun title, man. My 7-year-old nerd self loves that. I don't consider that true anymore as much as I'm a student of Star Wars, a continued, just a student before this franchise that continues to find me and teach me and cause me to grow. And this one got me today. It really did.
Yeah, it's a really powerful one, and obviously we'll talk about it more, but the way it plays out in the episode, being both literal of the truth is literally beneath the surface, but also that far more important, like, this one feels maybe like something that literally Plo Koon has to say to Commander Wolf. Yeah. But he actually can't, because Commander Wolf doesn't even know that he didn't know the truth beneath the surface. I think that was what was powerful about it to me, is it's such a great life lesson. And it's played out so succinctly of Commander Wolf is impatient, so he just wants to put a Band-Aid on the symptoms and not deal with or think about the actual problem. Yeah. That is just so powerful to me, from everything between, you know, just kind of doing soul searching as an individual, to working on a creative project with a group, to assessing how you want to feel about, you know, a political or social issue in the world, of like, are you reacting to the surface or are you getting down into the roots of why, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. The why is such an important Star Wars question, is it not?
It really is. It really, and it's so easy to get caught up in the surface level of things, right? Like, yeah. There's even like a life logistics thing that my wife and I have been dealing with, and it's frustrating. So there's an instinct in me to go, okay, well, fire back and take care of this thing. And they're like, but this thing is just on the surface and it doesn't actually matter. Yeah. We should address the thing behind it that is generating the little annoying things. It's the big thing behind it that is the problem, not, you know, the individual projectiles.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think this world even moved into the second episode too, just where you learn something from here and you could take it forward with you to solve some more problems there.
Oh yeah. There are constant truths behind constant surfaces. So let's dig into that. Let's talk about the big ideas at stake, the themes in these episodes. Where did you go?
This is mostly going with that first one, but again, I really do think it starts to apply into the second one, true of second one as well. I said true growth, change, and rebuilding begins with true understanding of what got you here, meaning some problems. You know, you mentioned Wolf not wanting to engage what really is there. We literally go below the problem to solve it, and it's not easy. And because of that, you know, deeper issues can be resolved by deeper understanding of what is happening. And then finding your true purpose, which is something that 3PO touches on here, R2-2, of course. There's a little bit of kind of what I loved about that Tatooine Rhapsody episode on Star Wars Visions of we're nothing but a band, and that turns out to be what saves the day, exactly what you are. This is only 3PO and R2 could solve this problem. In a lot of different ways, how they were built, whether it was by Anakin or otherwise. so it's finding your purpose and who are you, which is what Orphine actually asks them at one point or says to them. And all that kind of goes back to this true understanding of what got you here, your misconceptions, your ignorances, your miscommunications, your beliefs, both good and bad. And I just thought that was all wrapped up in this cute little package of.
Yeah. No, I'm right there with you. I think there's such a great big theme of the truth under the surface and how do you get to it, right?
Yeah.
Exactly what you're saying. Commander Wolf and the other clones, you know, they really only want to address the surface problems. They're not even, once they actually have the information, they're not even, you know, once 3PO and R2 have the information, it's so powerful that Commander Wolf is like, I don't even want to hear it.
Yeah.
We did the two things we were told to do and we are leaving. The literal underworld, you know, yeah. Then in the second episode, the petite,
yeah.
But who cares? Petitas, they're secretly, you know, want Big Hezu dead, but we don't know that. That's the truth lurking under the surface until it gets exposed. Yeah. The ruler of Belknap actually being a bunch of angry pit droids, which is so great. Yeah. So it's a problem after problem is a truth obscured. Yeah. And we see that 3PO and R2 are kind of triumphing in all of these adventures by using the skills that they have, which I think are like communication and bravery, right?
Mm-hmm.
3PO keeps actually, you know, literally translating or asking the questions or trying to resolve it by saying, oh, well let you have no leader. Let me provide you a framework. There's all these things that are about, you know, asking questions, solving riddles, and 3PO kind of keeps exposing what the actual problem is. And then R2 like just rushes in and goes, all right, well, I'm going to fix it now.
Yeah. Yeah. There was one great moment of when 3PO and R2 are out of the picture and Wolf and was it Manchuko? Manchuko's the king?
Yeah.
When Wolf's just like, hey, where'd you put that translator droid? Like, I can't understand the problem. I cannot communicate. I can't engage. I love that moment.
And then he's just like, yeah, no, that's good with me. Whatever. When King Manchucho is trying to tell him incredibly important stuff.
Yeah.
I think for me, the other big theme you were touching on as well. I wrote this theme is enter the chaos. That Orphany quote is perhaps it is through your desire to survive that your greatest purpose will be revealed.
Mm.
I really felt like this is a kind of a subtle contrast between R2 and 3PO that we know R2 is always out in the galaxy running into problems. He's, you know, when he's bored, he starts scanning things because he's a droid of action. He's got to be on the move. And so R2 kind of knows how big and wild and strange the galaxy is, right? Mm-hmm. And 3PO doesn't as much and wants to just be translating, helping with the senatorial banquets. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this, both these episodes are like this odyssey for 3PO to enter the chaos, to get out of his kind of the safety of his normal reality and explore things. I love that Padme just straight up says to him, I told you, 3PO, it's a big universe out there beyond the millions of planets you know. Which I feel like is a little bit of a, like, yeah, you can list them all, yeah, and you know what their favorite dish is, but you don't know them because you haven't, you know, experienced this. So to see him start out as just like, I'm just doing my normal thing that I'm pretty comfortable with is I translate. But then it turns into real diplomacy, solving riddles, realizing how messy democracy is. Like, I gave you the information and it's still a problem, you know, revealing false gods, revealing his true feelings for R2. Like, 3PO has to get emotionally messy, yeah, in order to go through this odyssey, you know? Mm. And I really like looking at it as this is 3PO's journey, and it ends with him going back to kind of his roots, right? Which is,
yeah,
being a storyteller, right? Mm. And this is me kind of applying a little bit of my life philosophy to it. Mm. I'm not saying it's utterly explicit on screen, but I just think so much like stories are the way we make sense of how chaotic life is. Of, can I take all these things that happened and organize them so they have a beginning and a middle and end and a moral? Mm-hmm. And the fact that that's basically what 3PO does is he has a chaotic as bleep adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And he ends by trying to lay it out for Commander Wolf over what will be a comedically long time and make sense of it and, yeah, learn things from it.
Yeah. He optioned his own story for a movie. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. I'm just on that's why art continues to be powerful and movies, plays, songs, everything. That's absolutely how we process the good and the bad, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. You go out there, you encounter the chaos, and then you try to bring some order in the form of a story.
Yeah. Love it.
Yeah. Any other themes before we move on to the bigger picture ideas?
I know, big ones. I mean, ones I want to hang up on a wall in my office to inspire me. And I mean it. And I it's just great. And if you're listening, you're not just a fan of the Clone Wars, you're probably this kind of Star Wars fan that finds yourself refreshed and inspired even by stories that you've heard many, many times. And it's been a lot of fun to be reignited by stories I'm already familiar with here in the Clone Wars.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel the same way. And I thought there were some big things that are familiar Star Wars morality perspective that were in these episodes. When you look at it through that filter, what did you think of?
There's some big ones, particularly in the second one. There's some ones I went to. I just wrote down a case for diplomacy is Padme would agree. And there's just a little bit of what was going on here, especially, you know, on Aline, you get these, you know, two parts of the world potentially at what you could almost say at war with each other. And then to be able to work it out the way 3PO and R2 help facilitate is just you put that against the backdrop of the war, especially when you got Padme there. Like, this war is a failure to communicate, failure to listen. It's pretty powerful. I also went with this idea of just, you know, you mentioned it up top of just Wolf and everyone are pulled from the war, which is, you know, something that they probably enjoy a little bit, quite frankly, let's be honest. The clones have that weird relationship with the war. For the humanitarian aid, and I just like there's this idea of the Republic, and I, you know, maybe someone in the Separatists would disagree with me there, the Mina Montaries of the world, but the Republic seeing value or trying to see the value in all planets and people, knowing how important it is. And you talk about justice for the Jedi being about measuring their intentions a lot of the times against any, you know, failures, perceived failures. I think this is, I looked at this episode as of kind of what many in the Republic are trying to do. Build. It's that light side thing. Build, not destroy. I think that a lot of that was present here.
Oh, no, I totally agree with you. And I'm so glad that you quoted the wisdom from my tea bag earlier this week that we talked about.
Yes.
build, not destroy. Yeah, I'm so there with you in terms of watching the Clone Wars in order and watching it not just for like, ooh, which episode is this? Is this one of my favorites? What cool thing happens? Kenobi's got a great line, but really watching it as the story of the Clone Wars, you know, they start out hopeful that they can kind of wrap this up quickly.
Yeah.
Then that starts to fade and they get stuck in the mire of it. And as we're heading into episodes about a Jedi general driving clones to their death on purpose and getting caught up in a slave trade, there's some darkness coming because the war is getting darker and it is getting worse. Mm-hmm. And it is easy to look at these episodes as saying like, oh, well, here's a little break from that.
Right.
But I think to me, the point of it is showing what's lost in the war is helping others, right? Normally, Jedi would be responding to these things, you know? Mm-hmm. Certainly be, you know, like two Jedi would be going there and asking all the questions that 3PO and R2, like 3PO and R2 are having to do the job of the Jedi because they're fighting a war, you know? And I love that quote from Yoda right at the top of, with hope, leave them, but return to the war you must. Like, Yoda is stretched thin and he knows it. I'm sending clones because it's a mercy mission. And it's, you know, at that point, a natural disaster, they think. And like they've asked for help and we have to give them help. But then, yeah, get back to fighting as soon as you possibly can. Like, what a sad thing for Yoda to have to say.
I loved everything you said, but there's some stuff that jumped out of just I had that same thought of, you know, I made an English muffin, a cup of coffee. And I sat down. I said, all right, let's watch these crazy frog nymph, Tempest episode. And you're right. It is so much of what's going on in the war. It's such a breaking it down into a small level. And also what is to come when you get into that second episode and the ideas of rebellion and toppled empires. And I look at it as a playbook for what could be, a playbook, what could have been and what could still be and how it just can't happen. And the indifference of Wolf isn't me pointing and wagging a finger at Wolf. It's just the circumstance. And you're so right to point out that the Jedi would normally be there. This would be a Jedi and a Padawan going to help things out, learning some lessons, some Padawan braids maybe being cut after the mission. But it can't be that. The Jedi have been forced in the situation of kind of losing their way in a way.
Yeah, just not being able to be there for the galaxy in these kind of mercy mission ways. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you touched on this, and I think it's just such a huge thing in these two episodes of the kind of two big Star Wars things combined of absolutely everybody matters, the people that you would overlook, you know, the story really held up by the Ewoks and Jar Jar, but appears in Star Wars in lots of different ways all the time, that everybody matters, don't judge people, particularly don't judge people as like, you're from an insignificant place, or you don't seem like a great fighter, you're not important. Like, everybody matters. And then, you know, the classic Yoda quote, right, of size matters not. It's like those things literally combined, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, 3PO and R2 are definitely holding up the, you know, everybody matters of, like, the Jedi and the clones, the cool people, the heroes. Like, they're busy doing their own thing. And they don't know that 3PO and R2 saved a bunch of people across multiple planets, right? Don't even know it. They're bored to listen to it. So that's that everybody matters. But then the size thing, right? You're dealing with the Aline, the Batitas, the pit droids, all like literal smaller people that can have this sort of insignificance just out of like a quick knee-jerk reaction to appearance.
Yeah, and not in a great way. There's some themes of not always in a great way, but there's this leadership selling lies to further their power. I'm almost thinking of Varys to Tyrion. A small man can cast a very large shadow. That's some of the other side. So there's some positive lessons to learn and some ways to, like you said, there's some comedy we'll talk about of 3PO overlooking the petites. But then the other side is, if you're not careful, this could, size matters not, also in terms of dictators rising to power. Be careful.
Yeah. Anyone can be anything, including pit droids can be brutal dictators.
True. But for the most part, really positive stuff. And the big picture of Star Wars, if I said before, but of like 3PO being perfect for this mission as he is, R2 as well. But it's very reminiscent of some of the Ewoks, their reactions to the very wise, that guy's wise 3PO. But others like Wolf at one point said something about, we're good, but not that good. Like they're not built for this. They're built for other things and they have their own purpose. And that's very comforting that who you are is enough. That's a great lesson from Star Wars.
Yeah, no, well said. A little bit of justice for Commander Wolf. Any other big picture thoughts before we take a break?
Other than this one word, rebellion. We'll talk about
it. It's a big one.
It's a big one. It's a big one.
It's a big one. Yeah, there are a lot of these episodes that are like, here are small microwaves to frame the macro conversation of the Clone Wars from, like, okay, well, you depose the dictator. Yep. Now what happens? Well, oh, democracy is not easy.
We might talk about it in other areas in the second half of the show, but one of the pit droids actually saying, there goes the Empire, run for it.
There goes the Empire, run for it. Yeah. And it is sad to once again watch clones not understand that they are fighting what they're actually fighting for.
Yeah.
Very sad. Somewhere Sheev cackles. Yes. Monster. Yes. All right. We're going to take a quick break and then we're going to be back to discuss all of our favorite action moments, a lot of comedy moments, and much more in just a moment. We are back to continue our discussion of this two-episode arc of Droids on an Odyssey. 3PO and R2 having lots of adventures, some involving action, some comedy. Let's talk action. Ken, there's not as much action in these episodes, but did you have some favorite action moments?
I'm just going to jump to the big one of the first episode. All right, let's do it. The action moment is R2 solving the riddle for morphine. That's some action. That's a big choice and a big victory.
Yeah, no, I like that a lot. The rocketing up. I love that scene because there's a brief moment for me of like, did 3PO and R2 just wander into a Legend of Zelda video game? Totally. It's very Zelda. Like, they're down in a temple. They're cute beings on the surface who are suffering. They solve a riddle and then they get, you know, rocketed up by water. Like, I have done all of those things in multiple Legend of Zelda video games.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Great storytelling in all forms.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of went in that first episode to that action moment of the opposite one of the fall. I thought it was great to see 3PO slip and just so on the nose, literal imagery of like down into the darkness and the unknown. And then R2 rocketing after him. It's so R2. So I enjoyed that.
Yeah, no, I was you mentioned the bravery of both of them, but the R2 just being a droid of action. We are droids of action. Lies do not become us. I love that he just was like, all right, here we go. Boom. Got to go save my friend again.
He's in another hole. Let's go. Any other moments from the first or the second episode?
Yeah, looking at the second episode, I just wrote this. Adi Gallia, just Adi Gallia. He's great. a Jedi that has some moments of where she gets her due, but I'm always up for more content with her. And I just love when she kind of shows up, just her energy, her momentum. She's all business in that scene, in the brief moments we see her. And I just kind of like highlighting her.
Yeah, no, she's great, and it's great to see her for a second, and I really like that shot where we have just a moment of, like I said, what would have been the focus of the episode in a different episode, Grievous and Gallia fighting away, and then R2 and 3PO go on their adventure, and in the background, you just see Adi Gallia fly through the corridor with a kick from Grievous, and it's like a real comedy motion, right? It's that flat sort of vaudeville proscenium and something just crosses straight across it. And it's this very comic way to say, that's not the focus this episode.
Yep. Yep. Love it. Love it.
Yeah. I'm sure we'll maybe you have this in comedy. I put it in action because it's some pretty great action. But the crushing of Big Hazu was probably my very favorite action moment.
You and I are in sync. This is action all the way. But I wrote it as this. They killed Big Hazu. Like, he's dead. Squished. R2 has a stain on his body for the rest of the episode.
Yes, the splatter of Hazu's viscera. It's a cute, fun episode where R2 is stained with the blood of a fallen dictator.
That's the best. I loved it. And it's action and it's somewhat accidental, you could argue, but it doesn't matter. The forces at work there. I just was died laughing. It's comedy for sure. But I mean, they put the splat. There's a splat sound effect.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is weird, dark Star Wars comedy. Like, you go to this episode and you're like, oh, yeah, no, it references Tempest and Gulliver's Travels and Wizard of Oz. And is that Pulp Fiction? Is that a Pulp yes. Fiction reference? The yes. sudden, accidental, surprise, brutal violence?
I think you could argue it is, yes.
Yes. Yeah, so that was just a fun yeah. shock that I remember there was some crushing, but I didn't remember how it happened, and yeah. I was thrilled by that moment.
Yeah.
Another big dark moment is I like when the pit droids have their fake hollow god and they're brutally zapping those bounty hunter types.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah. 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 I love the little bounty hunter type that the little weapons they have too. Some of that electro net stuff all kind of works for me, but
What are some other, any other moments for you?
Two R2 moments. I would be remiss if I did not mention my favorites, the Y-Wings and R2 taking down vulture droids in a Y-Wing going on a strafing run. Almost. It's a dream. It's a dream.
It's hard to do in Battlefront 2. You got to work at it. Yeah.
Yeah. Love that one there. And then there's a brief little, it could almost be comedy. A lot of the stuff in these episodes could be comedy, but I think it's action. When they're in that kind of droid fighting pit scenario and 3PO says something like, you know, about the fight. And like R2 is like, all right, F it. We're here. And it's like weapons come out and he's going to go fight. He's going to go scrap. And I just like, again, you're right. R2 action droid.
Yep, he's always, is that the challenge? Okay, let's go. I think my favorite action moment, ultimately, even though Big Hazy was up there from the second episode, is when the pirates get blown out into space and 3PO ends up just riding R2 in outer space. Like, right? Imagine that you are a kid again. We're of the original trilogy generation and somebody tells you, like, there's going to be a thing where R2 and 3PO are about to have to fight in a droid ring, but then they get blown into space and 3PO just rides R2.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
It's like somebody already made that up with their action figures and it ended up in this episode of Clone Wars.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I guess it's action. It's up there. You and I are also looking at Revenge of the Sith this week for Star Wars Ranked. The pirates flying through space is like those clones in the beginning of the Sith being shot out of the fighter, the ARC 170, just floating through their death in space. It's kind of brutal.
It's pretty brutal. So yeah, not a ton of action, but the action that's there more than makes up for it in its utter brutality.
Yeah. Yeah.
So any others or shall we move on?
We shall move on because many of the comedy moments are also action.
Yeah, that's true. So I wrote down way too many lines in moments of comedy, whimsy, and weirdness. So I will edit on the fly here, Ken, but what are some of yours?
Right from the beginning, that clone pilot seeing the Alenian on the Cancel Dragonfly and just the look and the Alenian is smiling and he just goes, right, going to be another one of those planets. I just, you know, I'm not even supposed to be here today. I just like that vibe.
Yeah, and also for me, it was something that I have no idea if it was the intention or not, but it was one of those lines that made it feel a little bit more meta, right? Because you can imagine somebody watching and being a little bit more into the Jedi and the bounty hunters and turning on this episode like, it's one of these episodes.
100%. And it starts, this might be one of your moments too, but the start of the second episode where 3PO is recounting everything to Padme, and even 3PO is like, I don't want to do that again.
Right.
So it's like, yeah.
I especially don't want to do it, you know, 3.5 times in this episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I love just starting with the sort of tension of the clones being like, oh boy, 3PO. When the one clone says to him, suck it up, shiny.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, it really sets the tone of like, ooh, 3PO has a real purpose here. He's being sent to translate. That's great, but this is not his normal arena.
Totally, totally.
In his normal arena, I love the translation from the king of welcome to our disaster. Glad you could come.
Right. Yes. Welcome to this party.
Yeah, that's some Douglas Adams good stuff there. Yeah,
absolutely, it is. It's a planet of mattresses that walking around too. We gotta get that. love that. And one of the ones for me during that sequence, there's that aftershock, and mm-hmm. I don't know. Sometimes this pops up with me. I don't know if why all this stuff always resonates with me. Watch it again. I beg of you, listening. Watch this episode again just to see the Alenians wobble in the most delightful way. And that aftershock,
they're real cute.
they're really cute and they're like all like da, da, da. I want like almost like a bobblehead of that. Or it almost reminds me of the old dancing baby Ooga Chugga, Ooga Chugga that used to go around on it from Ally McBeal. Like I want that Alinean thing as a screensaver.
That is a very good one. In the general area of earthquakes, I was really amused that there was a clone named Sinker in an episode about earthquakes. Like, little on the nose for old Sinker. I like this line from 3PO. We belong on Senator Amidala's balcony watching Coruscant's glorious moons rise above the city of spires.
Love that line. I'm glad you highlighted that one. It speaks of, you're talking to someone that hates camping. I respect those that love it. It's not for me. Camping for me is a hotel and a nice balcony thing. So I'm there with 3PO on that. But life sometimes says, hey, you gotta go camping, 3PO. You're out of here.
Yeah, you got to go where you're needed. Yeah, but it was great to just hear him like express that in such a different way and in such a sort of a flowing poetic way.
Yeah, yeah.
What are some other stuff for you?
Well, you highlighted it as a line of an import to the rest of the morals and the fables and the lessons here. But I want Wolf talking to man Chuko when he does say the line, okay, fine with me, whatever. It's really funny. It's very much my vibe at times, but it also speaks not to go back to a more of a serious morality tale conversation, but it speaks to that kind of agreement is not necessarily productive communication or problem solving, right? Like some of the Christ and I's disputes arguments might be with me just going, whatever you want, which isn't really any kind of communication. And it can be more of a roadblock than a path forward. And I just, so I love the line. I love what it means. You and I definitely like the idea of comedy being a form of communication about ideas. And that line worked for me on a lot of levels.
Yeah. I mean, the tone and the delivery is funny. This contrast between these battle hardened clones and they don't want to be on this planet. That's one of those planets. But yeah, that idea that like, cool, you just agreed to anything. You have no idea what was said to you. And the idea that like, I just want to be out of this so bad, I will agree to anything is like a super dumb move. And he doesn't realize it. That's great comedy and great meaning.
Yeah. Love that one.
I liked I Can't Eat You from Orvne, a little bit of a Jar Jar homage there, maybe with the tongue lashing out and like, I guess that maybe goes to that theme of 3PO is the right person at the right time, because would she have just devoured Commander Wolf?
Again, this beautiful, magical being. This is what Filoni talked about in that Q&A behind the scenes video. Yes, she's got a little bit of innate ability to go fast, but also got some force-fueled magic, maybe? A light side version of the Night Sisters even kind of indicated. If you want to dive deeper into that, but yeah, makes me think it would have been snacky.
Is there, he talks about how because people ask if she is a force user, right? And like maybe she has a relationship to it the same way the Night Sisters use magic space in the dark side. Maybe she uses magic based in the light side, and I guess eating based. Last one for me in that first episode is there's a lot of great little conversations between R2 and 3PO where you can really infer what R2 is saying, or 3PO lets you know. They're trying to figure out the riddle. And I think 3PO says, I just need to solve this question. And then R2 beeps. 3PO says, yes, riddle. So we know that R2, actually C-3PO.
R2 tweeted him, big fan, but you made this one mistake.
It was totally that. I'm like, technically, yes, but that's not actually the blaster number. Like, it was totally that.
Love it. Great pull.
Yeah. Any more for you in the first episode, or shall we march on to the comedy of part two?
Yeah, let's go to episode 406.
Episode 406, the first thing that made me laugh was the newsreel. Is it caught up in an adventure beyond their comprehension? Like, they don't even know what they're doing. That cracked me up. How about you?
You mentioned already, but I love a great line of from Padme of, well, I told you, 3PO, it's a big universe out there beyond the few million planets, you know. Funny in a lot of ways and poignant as always, but great stuff. And Padme's good, man. She's got a dry sense of humor that pops up a lot in the Clone Wars. I enjoy it.
Yeah, and she's so kind and supportive to 3PO and like kind of pushing him and like, yeah, no, go out there and do what you need to do and then come back and help me with the banquet. And, yeah, great stuff. I love it when 3PO says that his counterpart is programmed in 47 schools of self-defense. Just all of R2's tools pop out. Like, yes. Good BSing. Good BSing, guys.
It's a great moment when, because 3PO picks up that, like, weird stick with the light bulbs on it to fight. And then Sally R2 as a self-defense expert. And he knows karate. He knows karate.
It looks to me like he's holding a lollipop plant, which is really funny.
A lollipop plant. right when they get into the Y-Wing, when 3PO yells, this is not an escape pod. Funny, but also kind of, I'd argue, a canon connection.
It absolutely is, since they've been in an escape pod. And we've now seen Y-Wings used as escape pods a couple of times in the Clone Wars.
Yeah. And it's smart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a good escape pod. I really liked the petit... suddenly doing their weird chant of he's dead, he's dead, the big Hazu is dead. So vicious.
Love it. Well, what also means to me, like, they wrote the lyrics to that song. They were waiting for the time.
It's a very organized chant, right?
Yeah. I mean, those can happen organically, I know, but especially if you're in a pro wrestling audience. But I think that was they were waiting for that.
Yeah, yeah, very good one. Another 3PO line for me, and this was one where I felt like, you know, it's a very 3PO line, but it's talking about kind of dark and brutal shit. Oh, jeez, I swore. Excuse me. You can bleep that.
you know, kids, you got to learn at some point.
I'm so sorry. I don't know how that came out. Here's the 3PO line I like. Terminating the big one does not anoint me leader.
Yes. Oh, there's some great stuff there. Great stuff.
Any more for you?
Fear not, R2. Just little creatures can't possibly damage us. And then they immediately fall. You know, sometimes even when you see the punchline coming, it still is still funny. And it was executed wonderfully. And it didn't take long. Like, those electro staff stick. I mean, bang, like, it's all it took. Like, love it. So powerful lesson for 3PO, but a funny moment. I also love, and I'm sure you got this one. This was a great line. Congratulations, you are now a democracy. And then a fight immediately starts. I don't know if it's intended to be super meta or what it is, but it was great.
You know, I mean, I almost kind of included that in our discussion of how it ties to other things of, like, I think obviously a lot of characters in Star Wars are pro-democracy.
Yeah.
Obi-Wan makes that clear in Revenge of the Sith. But it that kind of point of parody reminded me of that great conversation between Padme and Anakin in Attack of the Clones, where he's saying, like, well, we should have a system where, you know, everybody sits down and talks and agrees what the problem is and how to fix it. Mm-hmm. Padme's like, that's what we do. It's just difficult.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is just, you know, I think for me, it goes to kind of these ideas of hope versus fear the democracy isn't an easy solution. It's a good solution, many of us believe, but it's messy and frustrating and hard to get to. So you have to have hope to make it keep working. And to me, it was just all those ideas bundled up in a really funny bit of comedy, but meaningful comedy, you know, of, like, yeah, this is the first thing they do with their democracy is, you know, start fighting over vote counts.
Yeah. And I love, too, that we don't really see how it plays out. We don't know how that ended up. We don't know who ended up as the leader.
Yeah. We don't know. Yeah. Maybe, is there a little Hazu who's taken over? Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Love it. No, and in truth, yeah, very powerful lessons to learn from that there. I did like going to the next planet with the Pitroids. There was a great line when R2 slides in there and just the one Pitroid's like, get your own organic.
Yeah, I wrote down, we worked hard to keep these mindless organics enslaved.
Oh man, love it.
Yeah, just, you know, in the sort of the dark comedy behind that to me is, like, Pitroids, we've seen Pitroids be treated very poorly, and these ones have had it. Yeah, what goes around comes around, and you don't want to be there when the pit droids are coming around. Love it. Final thing for me is, it is exactly as you were saying, a straight across the plate joke, but I think it's so effective because it comes from Plo Koon of the, well, I'm certain Wolf would love to hear about it.
Yes. Also, and I even saw this pointed out looking at Wikipedia and some of the lower end of the article, they have, like, continuity stuff. And, you know, Plo Koon just does kind of, like, play dumb with the droids. Like, who are, like, it is 3PO and R2. And he's interacted with R2 particularly in the Malevolence arc, right? So you can be like, continuity. I choose to believe that's just a statement on even later on, Kenobi's kind of playing a little weird with R2 on Tatooine episode 4. Of just, you know, you overlook these droids too easily. You just forget. You use and fight with them and then you forget them. And that's a statement. It's a statement on the why we got to pay attention to droids.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, Anakin is sort of positioned as the odd one for mm-hmm. like really knowing this droid and having a relationship relationship with him, and you know not wiping his memory or you know all that kind of stuff. And for everybody else, like I just think it goes for Wolf. I think Obi-Wan is, you know, playing with R2 a little bit in A New Hope, but it also goes to, you know, the question of like, well, why didn't Owen Lars in A New Hope recognize 3PO? Like, if somebody handed you a hammer, would you go, this is the one I had 20 years ago?
Right.
Maybe.
Yeah.
if you were sentimental about that particular hammer, but I just think they see them as tools.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. That's a great example. Yeah. A gold a protocol droid shows up. You're not going to immediately think anything. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great way to look at it.
I mean, not a stapler.
Yeah. Not great. We got to learn less. We got to treat those hammers better, but yeah.
Be nice to your hammers and staples. There we go. Yes. Any other moments of comedy or whimsy for you?
Final one I wrote down, you mentioned there's a ton of 3PO and R2 stuff. Great stuff all the way through. We mentioned the moment when they're both kind of losing their power. It's kind of sad and sentimental, especially if you've lived with these characters for so long in our lives as Star Wars fans. But I have always said, you and I have talked about this before, if just one of the underrated like comedy aspects of like all of Star Wars, anytime R2's there, is R2 is speaking. R2 is saying I'm actually 3PO. There's all that kind of stuff. In New Hope, he swears. He's the one that swears in Star Wars. Like, it's there. So I love when he says something as he's losing power and 3PO says, R2, don't mumble. Please don't mumble.
Please
don't mumble. I thought that was great.
Yeah. Yeah. You're usually so good at that sort of thing. 3PO saying, like, I thought you would have found his power by now. Oh.
Yeah,
that is so sweet. A sweet moment to end our comedy and whimsy. And we'll move on to canon and lore connections. I didn't feel like there was some fun stuff, but, you know, not as rich as maybe some other arcs. I liked learning that Aline is a Midrim planet, and this is its big appearance. And it's always fun to think, like, okay, well, we had a poor doomed pod racer, Rats Tyrell, and he was in Alina, and now we get to go to his home planet. We get to imagine maybe some of the people who are cheering him on.
Yes. Look, I'm going to say, I'll come to something in a second here. But no, wonderful. I love spending time at Tyrell's home world.
Yeah, I'm so curious what you're going to come to here.
I'll keep it for the next section.
All right. Oh, anything you disliked or question?
Yeah,
ooh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ooh. All right. There we go. That's how we tease the audience. Commander Wolf, of course, is a beloved clone, leader of Plo Koon's Wolf Pack, right? It was established in the Ultimate Star Wars book that he lost that eye to a Ventress attack, an attack from Asajj Ventress. So who knows if we'll ever get to actually see that. We know that he eventually got rid of his chip and lived with Gregor and Rex, as we see in Rebels, but we haven't had that story. So every time I see Commander Wolf, and I'm kind of reminded of these bits and pieces we have on his storyline, I wonder about the potential of a Bad Batch appearance.
I also love that you point out the Rebels connection. I got to tell you, like I often forget Wolf is there with the Rebels one. Like, and it's not a comment on Wolf or Greg or anything, but just like, you know, you focus on Rex and Rebels later on down the line, but they're a key part of that storyline early on in Rebels. And I love seeing Wolf again here.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And he's just, he's, I think, you know, pretty distinctive with that eye and that cool name.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any other Wolf thoughts?
No, underrated clone hero, we'll say.
Yeah, yeah. These two episodes did have some repeated Star Wars dialogue, some Star Wars poetry. There was that moment where 3PO gets bumped into by a clone and says, "Impossible clone," very similar to the way he says "Impossible man" about Han Solo. He does have a bad feeling about this while the ground is shaking and he's right by a giant hole. So I think good call to have a bad feeling about that. And we did get a "Did you hear that?" Infamously, 3PO's first line of dialogue. Any other sort of Star Wars poetry type lines for you?
I mean, I mentioned the escape pod once. And escape pods in Star Wars have a special place in heart. You know, they're pretty important. You know, a lot of people need escape pods, especially Grievous.
Yeah. Yeah, they're the clones kind of repeating some very similar Dagobah dialogue about, you know, coming here being a mistake, that kind of thing.
But nothing
with a whole lot of depth for me. I enjoyed the Impossible Clone, Impossible Man one in particular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Final thing for me is the, you know, seeing a droid fighting ring. I forgot that there was one. I remember that they had lots of little mini adventures in this episode, but I didn't remember that one of them was a droid fighting ring, like appears in Solo. And, according to old Wikipedia, first appeared in the novel Han Solo at Star's End. And I was thrilled to see the, I forgot that that was an ASP 7, a labor droid.
Yeah.
And I have a relationship with that ASP 7, because it's, from the, New Hope special edition. And for a while there, when I was madly collecting the Power of the Force 2 action figures, and I would go to, you know, at least one Target a day, ASP 7 was the peg warmer.
He was, and it was like, wasn't it kind of one of the highlighted released figures too at that time of from the special editions, that droid you just saw?
Exactly. And if they had known that ASP 7 shoots flames in a droid fighting ring, I think maybe that action figure would have moved more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's all I had for canon lore connections. Anything else?
No, you hit it. You hit it.
Okay, then I'm so excited to get to it. It's been teased. Ken, was there anything you disliked or questioned?
You know me, I'm pretty agreeable when it comes to this section here. I just kind of say, yeah, I'm like, woof, all right, fine, whatever. But no. If you're going to Aleen and you're going to go spend time with those wonderful people, why do we not get the follow-up to Rats Tyrell's widow and his children? One of them should have been in leadership. It should have gotten that conclusion.
Yeah, there should have been like young Duke Tyrell, right? Who's second in leadership.
Yes. I'm slightly joking, of course. But so it's fun to explore it. But, you and I love the story, the tragedy of Rats Tyrell and the pain of seeing his family walking in the background there while Qui-Gon's confronting Watto. Like it's painful. Let's get some closure.
It was one of the great tragedies of Star Wars. I agree. I didn't really have anything I disliked. These episodes are very fun, and when watching them again, like, yeah, they're fun. Some of the characters are cute and weird, but there is it's all held together by this is a cute way of telling some dark and important stories. Yeah. But I was curious if you questioned any of the alien design, because these are definitely some episodes of Clone Wars where to me, the palette of what Star Wars can look like is expanded. And like all that stuff with Orphne herself and the great tree people, the design style is a little different. And it really looks like Legend of Zelda to me. But it ultimately doesn't bother me, but I was curious if it bothered you.
No, you're great to mention it because I even wanted to highlight the Kandalo, these tree people, very Ent-like without a doubt, and drawing from other things as well in fantasy across the board. And it is weird when you stop and think about it. I always kind of do that thing of like, watch if you go back to, say, I don't know, New Hope, and you're watching Luke and Han pal around the galaxy, is it weird to think that somewhere the Kandalo exists still, does it sync up with what you grew up and thinking about Star Wars? And it doesn't always necessarily sync up, but what I love about it is I celebrate it as just artists. Again, these artists taking these shots, when you're sitting down and, hey, we got this crazy idea, you concept artists, come up with some crazy Star Wars tree people ideas. We want to hear him come up with these. The brownies and Willow, we're going to do the Star Wars version of it. And it does, as a fan, I'm not going to think about the petites a lot in my Star Wars fandom, but they exist. They're part of the galaxy. And to me, it's no more weirder than he's kind of a hammerhead. So let's call the figure that he's a walrus man. Like it's the same kind of spirit, same kind of thing. It just definitely does look different. I think it exists best in animation. But then again, the entire world fell in love with the Frog Lady. So
yeah,
it still happens. It's happening now in live action. So I do love, forcing myself in a way, not an entire negative way, but just like this, you and I've said a couple times, this episode's asks you to slow down and look at some different aspects of Star Wars that you don't normally look at. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with the Kandalo existing alongside Princess Leia, Luke, and Han Solo.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I really love the Kendallo. I love that they are a little bit of this sort of a darker flavor.
Yeah.
And you know, legitimately scary to 3PO to sort of just emerge from the shadows of trees being upset with you.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. And I love their design.
Totally.
All right. Anything else that we haven't talked about that you wanted to touch on?
No, I mean, the Kendallo, I literally wrote down the Kendallo in that section, so glad you brought it up. Thank you.
Yeah. Only other thing for me is just like a fun design thing. I like on Balnab when they get to where the fake hollow god is being projected by the pit droids. I love those, that just kind of community wrapping around the outside of that hillside.
Oh, yeah. I did like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There's just always that attention to detail in Star Wars of like, hey, there's a weird environment. Could people live there?
Well, yeah. Well, even to the Alenian, their planet, they're not their planet, but they're like, they're literally their village, their city. They very intricate designs are up on StarWars.com. If you guys go look through it, that they always do such a great job on those episode guides and the trivia gallery and all that kind of stuff. But nothing is throwaway. Nothing is throwaway.
No, not at all. And it looks great. All right, to wrap up our conversation then, if you could have a figure or toy inspired by these episodes, what might you want?
I mentioned one I already wanted. I want maybe, you know what I want? Not a bobblehead, but, you know, kind of like a, you know, those old hula girls you'd put on your dash. I wouldn't put on the dash of my car, but maybe if you're driving a cab or something in New York in the 60s. I'd want like a Lenian experience in an Aftershock so I can just put it on the dash of my car and it just shakes as I drive. I could be tickled pink every time I see it. I want that. And then we need, I don't care, 6-inch, 3¾, both sideshow. We do need R2-D2 with toppled dictator viscera stain.
That was the first thing I wrote as well, is R2-D2 with big Hazu viscera splatter.
Absolutely. You tell me that wouldn't be hot off the shelves.
It would. Oh, 3¾. Yeah, vintage, retro,
yeah,
because, Black Series,
yeah,
everything, sideshow.
Here's the thing. They'd announced that at like Hasbro PulseCon 2022 or Star Wars Celebration 2022. And a lot of the fandom would be like, what? What is that? Because this is probably two of the most skipped over Clone Wars episodes, guarantee. And that's a shame. That's a shame that it's one of the least watched. Watch it, folks. But I think then it would cause people to go dig in more.
Yeah, come for the comedy, stay for the splatter. It's look, there's a lot going on in these episodes. Maybe the other way around.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other thing for me is that the Kendallo tree people are so cool. I would love any figures of those, but I would love a HasLab project.
Oh, there you go.
To make like all of them to surround your 3¾ C-3PO. I think we'll have to wait a few years for that one, but I'd be thrilled by it.
You know what I would love then? The Kendallo. You're right. Great design. And I'm a fan of the Anson Jackson's Lord of the Rings. I love the design there. I would love, you know, they got those 12-foot skeletons going around right now. 12-foot Kendallo.
12-foot Kendallo, right? Exactly. Exactly. Just to keep celebrating autumn.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So next up, we are going to discuss, oh boy, the terror of Pong Krell, season 4, episode 7, 8, 9, and 10. One of the episodes is called Darkness on Imbara. The whole thing could just be called Darkness. It's a great, great, memorable arc, but a lot of horror to dig into. So I'm looking forward to digging into the horror with you, Ken.
Yeah.
What do you think the moral of this episode of our podcast should be?
It's kind of an immoral we've touched upon before, but no matter how small you think your podcast is, it makes a difference.
A fabulous, fabulous moral. I want to tell people where they can find us.
Absolutely. And some information. We are Force Center Podcast. We can be found and followed on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram, YouTube as well. We can be liked on Facebook. Hey, who doesn't love a like on Facebook? Find us at Force Center Podcast. We have merch available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. Get an audiobook on us by going to audibletrial.com/Force Center. Podcasts can be found on a lot of different spots, including the classics, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, but also try Spotify, the new classic, and Amazon Music as well, and other places. Just search and find us. You can support us directly at patreon.com/4Center. Bit of a fun announcement here. We are going to be appearing on part of the Make-A-Wish charity live stream event, which is from Pete Fleitzer from Around the Galaxy and Scotty and the gang from the Bomb Bad cast. And on November 6th, we're going to be on their Potathon, as they're calling it. It's an all-day event with them, so check it out. But we are going to be involved around 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, or wherever the time zone is for you. We're going to be talking about The Phantom Menace and the purity impact and the story of that movie in great detail. Going to be a fun segment there. So check it out. We'll tweet out links and all that kind of stuff. Very happy to be involved with that.
Very, very exciting stuff. Yeah. And did you list your own personal things?
I did not. I just, I just remembered. At @KatNapsack on Twitter, follow me there. My website, katnapsack.com, will link you to shows I do. My Game of Thrones podcast, Casually Talk, my radio show, Pop Rockin' Radio, and upcoming stand-up dates. Just had a fun show this weekend in Burbank. Met 4Center listener David Taylor and his dad. I believe his dad's name was Bob. Great. They were awesome. They were out of town visiting, and they caught the show. I happened to be there. It's great to meet 4Center fan and friend out in the wild. So go to kenafsick.com for information for more comedy dates. Joseph.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok as @JosephScrimshaw, and then go to my website as well for all sorts of other comedy adventures, comedy albums that I've done in the past, shows I've written for. And if you are a fan of Dune, my wife and I on my other podcast, Obsessed, just had a big conversation about the movie Dune Part One. We talk about a lot of things, but also dig into what Ken had mentioned, all these great discussions of the similarities and the differences between Dune and Star Wars. So if you're interested in that, again, that podcast is called Obsessed, and you can find it all on my website at josephscrimshaw.com. For now, for myself, for Ken, and of course, for the splatter of Big Hazu, this has been the Clone Wars Report.